Are you tired of listening to German language all day long?
Don't you just want to get your news and topics presented in English, even though you live in Germany?
Then here's your solution.
Yeah!
Elephant in the Room, an English radio show where we discuss things that people tend to ignore.
Tune in on Color Radio on 99.3 and 98.4. Every second and fourth Monday of the month.
Elephant in the Room, a radio show by the Black Rose Radio Collective from Dresden.
Hate Mondays. Be organized. Stay cool.
Hello and welcome to our today's radio show here by Elephant in the Room by Color Radio. Today we choose a topic which is kind of a recent issue. There are protests going on in Bangladesh from the Garment Workers Union. And we already, some month ago made an interview with women organizing and feminist movements on other Asian countries. And yeah, we would like to share all that today with you.
A couple of months ago, a Bangladeshi clothing company has terminated almost 6,000 workers, some of whom have worked for the company for over two decades. The owner of two clothing factories belonging to the Dragon Group has used the window of vulnerability due to the COVID-19 pandemic to let go of his workers without paying them their benefits. These withheld wages obtained to the workers by the ruling of the Bangladesh Labor Act of 2006. And although the Garment Workers Trade Union Center, GWTUC, has been striking ever since, so far the Bangladeshi government does not enforce the law upon the Dragon Group. And a recent press release states that the GWTUC is planning to expand their strike, accelerating the pressure on the government. Therefore, they are planning to an occupation on the Ministry of Labor and further to lay siege to the Prime Minister's office.
Recently, the topic of workers' rights and work safety in the textile sector throughout Asia has moved more into the center of our attention. Partly, this even had an effect on our choices to produce clothing and the demand for fairly produced clothes. But still, mostly we only look at those recurrent injustices in the garment business from far. On the other side of the globe, locals have been fighting fiercely for their rights. Additionally, unions have formed that particularly focused on the situation of women in those systems. Often, women do not only have to battle the usual load of inequity, but also face a rather nasty treatment in terms of sexual and healthy safety. These unions are organized with a feminist and queer feminist mindset. We have talked to Jamila, who is part of the Debindu Collective from Katunayaka in Sri Lanka, and to Dian, who is part of the Interfactory Workers Federation from Jakarta in Indonesia. These two extraordinary women told us firsthand about their experience with union work in the garment business. Battling not only for minimum wage and fair working hours, but also about the obstacle they are facing trying to organize feminist union work in a deeply patriarchal society. Additionally, we talked about the relation between feminism and fair labor conditions.
Thank you.
For the beginning, I brought you a short excerpt from a video, actually, I would like to share. Let's see how this works. Okay, so what was shown on the video actually was a protest, a workers' protest on labor laws across Indonesia in 2019. And what was important there, or why the video was interesting, is that the person who was calling through the megaphone wore a T-shirt, and on this T-shirt was mentioning a woman called Marcina. So she seems like a figure where people relying on. So we were wondering who actually was Marcina.
And this is Marcina. Marcina is a women workers who was murdered by Suharto's regime in the military because demand on wage raising for 200 rupiah. She is in Duarjo, East Java. She was killed. There is a gun shot in her vagina. And until now, it was closed. The government didn't admit it as a human rights violence. That's why we make the name of Marcina as our radio, our community radio.
So quite a harsh story. Marcina actually lived from 10th of April in 1969 till the 8th of May in 1939, when she was killed. She was an independent trade unionist working in a watch factory back then in East Java, as Dijan mentioned right now. And she was the negotiating for 500 workers who went on strike for non-respect of the minimum wage and union autonomy. And on the 1st of May in 1993, she was kidnapped after a demonstration, raped and brutally murdered. Her body was found 4 days later, and it generally is believed that the military of the Suharto regime was involved in her disappearance and subsequent death. So, but what we know is that since the early 1990s, women have been trying to enforce their labor rights in Indonesia.
Yeah, well, Indonesia lies in the 10th place among the world's largest textile and clothing exporters. That is of 2013. And however, clothing accounts for only 10% of Indonesia's total exports. This is because exports of agriculture products and oil are dominating. So although it's one of the biggest producers, it's not even the biggest export they're doing. Over the past 15 years, Indonesia has benefited from the fact that many companies gave up production in China and Vietnam, for example, and moved to the Isle State. And 90% of the textile and clothing companies are located in large industrial parks on the island of Java and mostly in the capital of Jakarta. And this is where Deanne is active with her union, the Interfactory Workers Federation. As the name already suggests, the activists cooperate with different companies and sectors, but also between different countries. And both are organized in the Clean Clothes Campaign, a campaign trying to improve working conditions in the global garment industry.
Before we start with the situation in the unions, let's clarify a bit more details about Clean Clothes Campaign. The Clean Clothes Campaign is a global network dedicated to improving working conditions and empowering workers in the global garment and sportswear industries. Since 1989, CCC has worked to ensure that the fundamental rights of workers are respected. They try to educate and mobilize consumers, lobby companies and governments, and offer direct solidarity support to workers as they fight for their rights and demand better working conditions. Clean Clothes campaigns brings together trade unions and NGOs covering a broad spectrum of perspectives and interests, such as women's rights, consumer advocacy, and poverty reduction. As a grassroots network of hundreds of organizations and unions, both in garment producing and in consumer markets, the campaign can identify local problems and objectives and transform them into global actions. We met Diane and Jamila first time end of last year. There was a presentation of the local syndicate, which is since quite a while together with other syndicates from other countries supporting the struggle in Asian countries. And for the fact that there are a lot of grassroots and syndicates and anarchists perspective organized unions. So we met them at the presentation here in the local center. And after the presentation, we were asking for an interview and asked a lot of questions. So what first of all we asked Diane was about to tell us the feminist claim on her union.
Our union want to empowering the women workers so that they can be active in the union, and we trust that the workers' right will not fulfill while the women workers still in the
oppression of patriarchal still oppressed at home, in the working place, and still not equal with men. So we tried how the voices of the women have spaces in the union, in each union, and also in a workers' movement. So it will be like how to make it to make the workers' movement more concerned about women's rights, and realize that if there is no independence of women, then there will be no independence at all for the workers. That's what we want.
So, yeah, that are strong and important words she already mentioned at the beginning. And so we ask her actually, what are the problems women have in the textile factories and why it is particularly important to stand up for women's rights in the trade union?
Yeah, this is the gender-based violence in Indonesia. In KBN Cakung Industrial Park, this is an industrial park in North Jakarta, mostly garment, 56.4% women experience sexual harassment. And in Indonesia, 44% women workers experience sexual harassment. In 2001 until 2011, every day, 35 women become the victim of sexual violence. This is the information from National Women Commission.
Yeah, horrendous numbers that we just heard. Gender-specific violence in companies is a huge problem in the garment industry as well. And Diane criticizes that there is no awareness whatsoever about the sexual harassment at the workplace. And we found the number of 76% of the violence in the workplace is gender-specific violence against women. According to a 2018 annual report, out of 3,500 cases, this is 2,660 per year. So all in all, a huge amount of women experience this kind of violence in the workplace. And Jamila from the Dabindo Collective in Sri Lanka also told us that most young girls and women between 16 and 24 years are sewing between 12 and 16 hours a day in the factories. Most of them are migrant workers from rural areas. They are isolated from their families and friends and excluded from the education system. The contracts stipulate minimum wage and an 8-hour work day, but this is not put into action. The contracts are not enforced, and the young women are at the mercy of their employers without protection and without knowledge about their rights and what they are allowed and not allowed to do. And she also reports gender-based violence in companies and in the society in general is a big, big problem. And her trade union work consists of informing women about their rights. And she talks about why it is so easy for companies to exploit and intimidate these women that are usually pretty young and maybe don't know yet what they can and can't do and don't know what their rights are. Fatal.
From gender-based violence, we told some boyfriends dislike to join with us. We are speech, both of us, and they are coming together. We have no tripartite dialogue, and we have no trade union president in women Sri Lanka. Majority are men. We establish a trade union. Faced to refuse that position, we are alternative women's trade union. And other thing is, Sri Lankan is a very traditional and regions is involved the always to control women's because we have no controlling birth and
birth control.
Yeah, and how to say
it's like
prohibited in Sri Lanka, LGBTQ, and I can't.
Abortion, prohibited.
Mm-hmm. And young women, girls take some pills, postino. Mm-hmm. They always use, they thought it is a control method, but it is very dangerous. They regularly takes, after that they became some cancer. Yes, our education system is not talk about labor law, reproductive health rights. Our traditional teachers are always
silent.
Yes, this problem, and we have to more empowering women workers, but they don't know their rights, their women rights, worker rights, reproductive health and safety. We have no occupational health and safety research in past 40 years. Some worked in higher sounds, higher electricity and standing, and after some chemicals they are using, they married. After 5-6 years, they have no children. But they thought they are practicing some 12-15 hours. They are working some stress, majority are stress. They are no counseling system. They have no allowed to work with us because they have only one day. Their other things are covered these days, and they not allowed to work with us, and factory managers always treat them and throw out in the factory. It's very difficult to mobilizing women workers.
Yeah, as you could already hear, abortion is actually prohibited, and in Sri Lanka, and also there are no LGBT rights. And the biggest problem seems to me, as Jamila just mentioned it, that there is actually no education for women about almost anything. So not about labor rights, no reproductive rights. And so this gives actually the possibility for those, for men who are usually owning the countries, to put a lot of pressure and power on those women. So apart from the fact that they are actually not really aware of their rights, it's in the way that usually women try to keep their pregnancy a secret in order to not lose their job. And as women don't know so much, it is easy to put pressure on them. So some factories actually, I really couldn't believe it when she was telling us, distributing pills for women to actually not get pregnant.
Detected in the northern factories, the female workers are distributed with tablet to have the monthly menstruation delayed. Their incident where the menstruation was completely stopped for some women, it prevent them from being pregnant.
Yeah, I think it's a really awful situation, actually, that your boss is not only owning your labor power, but also eventually owns your body and basically deciding over your life. I think this is something people cannot really imagine how this must feel. And we were wondering, actually, how the unions respond to this kind of serious violations of rights and violence against women.
I still remember when we bring the issue of sexual harassment and also sexual violence. Many unionists have comments that it's not the issue of workers, it's an issue of women. It will split the workers' movement, and it's become a long debate also.
Yeah, of course. This argument is not new. Women are the problem. It's nothing else. And of course, if women are in charge of, deciding their own fate here, concerning sexual harassment or sexual violence or just health issues, we asked her how does she explain that men in the movement think that this is not their business. How can this be? How does she think? What is the explanation for this?
The movement still very masculine. You know what I mean? Yeah. When you attend a meeting and you are the only women in the meeting, and when the women speak and they ignore us, it's very masculine. It's not comfortable. That's the challenge. So that is as a woman, I have to prove many times that you have ability.
Yeah, so eventually they both speak of the fact that there are hardly any women in the institutions, which is probably also explainable by the fact that the women that work in those jobs often are not allowed any education or are allowed to get into this because they're owned by their boss, and there's hardly any quota. And at the national parliament, it's nothing different. In Indonesia, the percentage of female members of parliament is just 2%. 2%, even though women make up 53% of the population. So this is a huge underrepresentation. And feminist unions are, in general, not recognized by the authorities.
It's also a challenge because in Indonesia, also workers' movement, including seen us as a... So, are you a union or LGBT organization? Are you a union or you a women organization? But, they cannot prove anything because we involve in women in workers' movement, we involve in a strike, many strikes, we involve in social movement. So, it's like a daily battle.
So Diane had said that better working conditions for all will only exist if women are also represented in the struggle and if the society does not oppress them. And we wanted to know more about this connection. Both cited major structural problems that legally place women in a worse position than men in society, first of all. And Jamila had cited, among other things, the prohibition of abortion and the lack of persecution of sexual violence and the health issues. Yeah.
And also Diane explained that in Indonesia exists actually a marriage law, which in her view is the legal basis for women's dependence on their husbands.
The marriage law is a number one in 1974. Yeah, it mentioned also the polygamy, that the husband allowed to have a four wife, and it's also like an achievement from the women movement before, because there is no limitation before for the polygamy, and then it's limited because power. So now, we still try, but it's a long struggle. it influence the working condition because the salary of women then become different to the men workers because women is not the breadwinner. Yeah. So the government and the company choose to follow the marriage law instead of to follow the labor law, because the labor law mentioned that it should be equal pay and no discrimination regardless the sex and gender. But well, for brands, not only Adidas and Nike, many brands produce also in home-based worker by home-based worker, so it's produced at home. Many happen, so it's like how the global supply chain become more complex. So it's it's subcontract not only to another manufacturers and another province, but also at home. Yeah, so that it's not easy because it become very flexible.
And not easy to control.
Yeah, And it's cheaper because you need not to build the manufacturer, you need not to pay the manager, you need not to pay. And for women, it's like a more flexible and easy too, because they can produce at home and also doing many things at the same time, can take care of the children at home while produce the clothes.
Yeah, so the marriage law is basically kind of the ground reason for inequality in general and specifically in the context of the labor question. And what also was interesting to me was that, so she said, in addition, the production is now so complex that women also produce at home as subcontractors. So this seems to have some benefits, which eventually lead to the question, to the point that women are at home taking care of children, cooking, cleaning, and hey, working the whole fucking day. And so eventually, in this kind of circumstances, the working conditions are really uncontrollable. So there's nobody who tells you, hey, stop working, because you were already working 8 hours. And there's also, no share on the whole household and childcare question. And another aspect actually she spoke about is this game with the minimum wage. Even so, people started organizing in companies to try to avoid paying the minimum wage. And therefore actually change locations and move to another regions and their production. And yeah, this is kind of obviously the possibility those kind of companies have. They later gonna say something about that. And also another issue is this kind of temporary employment agencies pay the workers around 4.84 euros, which is 1,000 rupee in a month. And this salary is paid for a certain production rate. So if you don't fulfill the rate, they are going to cut, so that means to get even less. And with this kind of tactics, the minimum wages are totally pressed because, for sure there's kind of a formally minimum wage, an official one, but as we heard before, those things are not put in action if there are these kind of holes where you can get around, like with cutting them. And for the temporary workers, it on top of that is especially hard to organize themselves because they are often moved around. So they are used in some factories, so they are brought to the other one, and so they don't really stay really long, because they were put wherever they are needed.
Yeah, I mean, we already said that most of the workers are not. Do not have like the safe community around them usually when they come and work. And then if you move around, you can't even make this for yourself. Like you can't make friends with the other workers. You just are moved around and you may not see them for half a year and then see them again. Not really a nice way to work. Yeah. And so in conclusion, basically we asked them about the strategies to cope with all those problems and all those obstacles that are put into these workers and female workers' ways.
We focus now in GBV, gender-based violence. And we have two programs. The first is warning board installation. So this warning board is this industrial park free from sexual harassment. So we demand to the management of industrial park to install this board. It's like a support to the victims of sexual harassment that we are not alone. Yeah, the sexual harassment is recognized. It happened. And also it's like a warning for the harasser. And this is the help desk women workers for complaint. So that if women workers experience sexual harassment, they can come to this help desk women workers.
Yeah, and additionally, a really important move within the struggle is, of course, the international cooperation, especially on an Asian level, so an international level, and because this can prevent companies from easy moving from one place to another, you know, like just, okay, in Indonesia, this doesn't work anymore, let's go to another country and exploit the workers there. Nobody really wants that.
They are working with Asian level, South Asian level, Asian level, and we get together once a year and discuss and make a work plan how to get together and network. So, in 2011 or 13 in Bangladesh, huge building collapse, 1,000 died. But brands are not agree to pay their compensation. We are work together. We are sign a petition mm-hmm. to so many brands. Zara. Now they have protocol. According, they make with brands, government and the trade union. It is a collectively they are having that accord to work collectively and networking. It is very important.
But in my union, in Clean Cloth Campaign, is still new, 1 year. Yeah, it's still new. And in Ancient Forward Campaign, it's newer. So just start in Asia level. I think it's also a good start to strengthen the union. What kind of support in Asia level to strengthen the union?
And we are going to Bangladesh embassy in front of. We are protesting, pay give their fair wage and compensation, and petition is very important. And we are publishing our social media their situation, and they are know globally, and we work together, awareness with our workers. They are supplying H&M in H&M in Bangladesh. This is the real situation, but workers not aware from which country to supply us. They are no supply chain. They have no idea. We are awareness supply chain. And regionally, we are facing some. We have GSP Plus. We have South Asia region. We, Pakistan and Bangladesh, have GSP Plus. We are sharing with our situation in Pakistan and Bangladesh.
In Indonesia, different provinces, a different minimum wage, and the gap is not so big.
Yeah.
That's why it's easy from one manufacturer shift to another. Province because cheaper and also the land also cheaper.
Yeah. Some workers get try to increase in their salary. They says we are moving to another country. That Asia Flowage Alliance has represent all countries, all Asian countries. We demanding, we want a decent minimum wage. We all are demanding decent minimum wage, but they can't go Bangladesh. They can't go because we have their members. We are demanding always decent minimum wage. is a good idea to.
And further, we wanted to know which other demands do they make?
They have a hidden cost because they are come here to in rural villages. They are 24 hours spending work this area. They have to go to their villages. They have to pay additional transportation. They work with overtime, and they lost their social situation in their, they can't allowed to go to their family weddings or special days. Other private sector workers live with their family, but they are living alone. It is, we are founding, they face a hidden cost. We are bargaining the minimum wage, we demanding living wage. Because they can pay their monthly cost is their average salary, the monthly cost is 60%. They have no savings.
So the idea of the living wage, as Jamila suggests, it seems really important to actually face the real social situation the women have and the problems of this, as she called it, hidden costs, like the public transport, and the problem of the overtime hours of work. To, yeah, maybe give another frame of how actually the living situation of women in this region is. The average life expectancy of women in Indonesia, for example, is 71 years, and in Sri Lanka, it's 78 years. To compare with Germany, it's here women are in average life expectancy of 83 years. So the situation of women facing in this region is quite hard on really a lot of in a really lot of matters. So that strategy of the feminist unions try to approach this kind of social issues and the labor question on different levels and with different strategies. So they are providing, for example, also a newspaper, and they have a community radio, as we already heard at the beginning, called after Marcina. And they are using social media to discuss their demands. And as we already mentioned, they have quite a reach with this social media because they are connected to different syndicates around the world. And they are, as we already heard, quite radical in their ways of fighting. And there's one more statement from the Yan about this question of strategies.
In negotiations in supplier with manufacturer, with the boss, it's not equal, in not equal position. We should have a strike. We should strike, then it will be equal. We should have direct action, then it will be equal. The experience of the struggle, we can enjoy the wage raising until 48% in 2013. It's not just only because of the negotiations. It's because we have strike. And in the wages raising until 232, it's not because Suharto's a kind-hearted man, yeah? Because we force them. We destroy their military regime and then the rest wage 232. Marcina Dai just only want to wage raising 200 rupiah. 200, it's cents in euro, it's cents. And she died. But it's worthy because after that, Suharto's regime falls. So it didn't mean that I disagree with the negotiation. We need it, the dialogue, the social dialogue. Okay, let's have a dialogue. And then but make it equal.
Yeah, I really love how passionate she is about the striking. Yeah, so it's pretty clear in Diane's opinion, striking negotiating is good, but striking is also very important and maybe sometimes better. And the connection between the labor struggle and the feminist struggle is super important. The feminist labor struggles make precisely this a topic and attempt to problematize every form of discourse. It is about equal rights for all, including all and every gender there is.
My union also organized LGBT community, well, women workers, yeah, LGBT. But finally we have one gay members. It's so nice. And to provide to provide the safe space for LGBT and to build the awareness of the members also who is not LGBT. At the very first, until now still, another members disagree why we should organize LGBT, and we have many discussion between the members. We should see in a human right perspective, regardless the sex or the gender, we cannot discriminate anyone. So it's also hard for us as the union. We are as a feminist union. I think that as a feminist, have a responsibility to equal gender, including LGBT, it's take the responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's the obligation of as a feminist. It's not like that, just only women, not LGBT. No, we cannot say, we cannot do that declare ourselves as a feminist. Also, we have to struggle for other.
Yeah, and now it's time that we show our solidarity with the workers in Asia as well. And we call upon the people to rethink their ways of consuming. And I guess It's not just about us consuming differently. It's also about learning and being inspired by these people, these unions, how they are going against the struggles of gender inequality and other problems. And yeah, things that exist not only in Asia, but probably everywhere on some level. And we just want you to know that it'd be great if the next time you go shopping, maybe you think about this a little bit.
Yeah, this was it for today. Here by Elephant in the Room, you can listen to our show on and.notraces.net. And we will hear from each other in 2 weeks. Hate Mondays. Get organized and stay cool.
Thank you.